to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defence and Happy Easter, everyone. I'm your host, Del, and this edition of Shoot the Defence is brought to you by the FNX Network, My Sportswear, and the Offside Trust, safeguarding children in football and other sports. So no longer will our kids suffer. We're here to make a difference. My co-hosts this evening are, as ever, I can say that now, Yannakis, how are you doing?
Not bad, you. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. How was yours?
Very good.
Good, good. Do you eat any eggs?
No. Had the barbecue, though.
Well done. And Rodri Giggs. How are you doing, Rod? You good?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Quiet Easter, but yeah, I'm good.
It's the best way, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. No beer, just chocolate.
And how many of your kids are you going to eat?
Pardon?
Eggs. I need to watch if I say that. Are you going to eat any of their eggs?
Pass.
Well, my little one's got about 8 left. And
nine tonight after
your one, yeah. Cheers, mate.
That's very welcome.
Yeah, give them to the homeless shelter, I think. What do you reckon? Yeah, let's do this. Right. So, just when we thought the title was wrapped up with a pretty blue bow on the top, along came the big bad Mourinho to blow the title race wide open. Now, Spurs fans obviously rolled their eyes in disgust when they saw United's lineup that had the front line of Rashford and Lingard, but the academy graduates put in a performance that proved that was wrong, myself included. Now, gents, no Ibra, no Mkhitaryan, no Martial, no Shaw, Diamond at left-back against Moses. I mean, the general feeling when the teams were announced was that Jose had one eye on Anderlecht on Thursday night, but not for the first time. The special one masterminded another win. 2-0, what performance?
That was brilliant yesterday. It's the best I've seen us play for quite a while, from start to finish.
You got a tear in your eye, you're so happy.
I was happy. I was. We won a home game as well. Tactically, how good was Mourinho yesterday? It just proved again what a genius he is tactically. Nullified the threats of Chelsea, put Herrera and Hazard. I mean, if Hazard had to go to the toilet, Herrera would have followed him yesterday. I mean, that's how close it was to him yesterday. No shots on target by Chelsea for the first time in a decade. Just proves what a performance Man United put in yesterday. Rashford hasn't been great for United this season, but a special mention yesterday, I thought he was absolutely outstanding. I mean, the FA Cup game where he kind of tore Chelsea's defence apart had something to do with him starting up front yesterday, and it caused them loads of problems. And Lingard, they couldn't handle the two boys up front with their pace, and fully deserved, and hopefully it's the start of many performances like that from United.
Rod?
Yeah, echo what Yam was saying. It was a decent display, especially from the two boys up front. But it was just a tactical masterclass, wasn't it, for Mourinho? And then everyone was at it, and it was a great win. It was a good atmosphere as well for a change. It sounded like it was bouncing yesterday, Old Trafford.
It reminded me when we beat them 1-0 years ago when Fletcher scored that header. It was just rocking, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it sounded lively yesterday. It's not been like that for, I hadn't heard it like that for a long time. But yeah, it was a joy to watch yesterday. It was a good game. Every single person participated. It was a good game.
And as you said, Ander Herrera, he didn't let Hazard get a kick and put in much more of a disciplined performance as he did in the FA Cup game. Now, he's really stepped up since Mourinho's come in, hasn't he?
He has. He's been one of the kind of unsung heroes at United, to be fair. He's dropped a lot deeper. He's playing kind of as a holding midfielder, more like. And he does a job for United, didn't he? He really does. And he's got a lot of energy. He's got quality. I mean, he even played the pass for Rashford to go yesterday, which was a brilliant pass. Kind of ripped the defence wide apart with that pass as well. But he's been excellent, and he's a fan's favourite at United as well, Herrera.
Thing is, what I like about him, and I've been saying this for weeks, he's got that little snidiness in him. That little nasty element, which we haven't had in midfield for a very, very long time. Okay, granted, he's not the best of midfielders. I don't think he's worth the £30 million that we paid for him. But we're basing this on three seasons where we've had two different managers. One of them really didn't trust him too much. And now we're seeing a manager that trusts him, that's giving opportunities, that's basically saying to him, right, be our main man in the centre of the park. Obviously, Pogba's going to be doing what he's got to do. He hasn't done much, really. But you need that guy there. And I think Herrera could, you know, people are saying that he's captain material. I don't think he'll be our captain. I think it'll be Pogba, to be fair. But, you know, Rodri, I can't think of one United player who didn't have a bad game. You know, although this performance really shouldn't come as a surprise because United have been ripping teams to shreds this season. I mean, the only thing that's let them down is their inability to put chances away. What do you think this result has done for the squad's confidence going into the final 6 weeks of the season?
I still think the confidence would have been high if it was a poor result. But let's not forget, they've not been beat for 20 games, apart from the FA Cup game. So it's just, and like you say before, they've been blowing teams away at Old Trafford and just not putting the ball behind the net, like Jose Mourinho's been talking about recently. If we had like a Javier Hernandez, it would put in a different story. So it bodes well for the future, and it gives that the boys now an extra bit of confidence from Sunday, because you know it was a masterclass. But you know the players have got to go out and do the jobs that they've been shown to do, and it was like I say, it was a good display.
Psychologically, was a big result for United yesterday. United haven't, you know, it's well documented, they haven't won a lot of big games this season. And to do that, especially with the league leaders, and, you know, there was the, you know, the Mourinho, Conte, the Chelsea factor. It was good for the confidence and you know, to build for something next season as well. You know, Mourinho would have gone after the game and gone to them, every single one, look what you've just done. This is, you know, the benchmark of playing for a club like this. This is what you can do. And, yeah, like I was saying, for confidence, it was a brilliant result.
Mm. To be honest, one player stood out most for me, and that was Damian. I've been slating him all season. I've been saying he's an Italian defender that can't defend.
That's right.
But again, did not put a foot wrong. Like I said, it was just one of those games where everyone performed. Even De Gea, his starting position was outstanding. I've been slating him for that. But what of Chelsea then? Because obviously Alonso and Courtois were always going to be big losses, yeah. But they just looked out of ideas. I mean, De Gea didn't have a save to make. And as you said, last week I said this could be Tottenham's big chance to win the title. And it's actually looking more and more possible by the week. I know last week you said Chelsea haven't gone through a blip.
Yep.
Or a dip in form. Obviously, since they've reached the summit, they had that dip in form prior to the Arsenal game. Yep. But do you think yesterday's result at United and the loss in the semi-final against Spurs will start somewhat of a downward spiral or downward turn?
It could possibly put a doubt in them. I mean, the manager looked very, what's the word? He wasn't as energetic as he was. Subdued. Yeah. He was like...
Or bounce yourself, was he?
That's right. And that kind of probably reflected to the team as well. Even his interview after the game, he looked worried. Now, as a manager, you don't want to reflect that to your players. You know, he should have come out and said, yeah, it was one of them games. We didn't turn up. Full credit to United. We'll bounce back next week, positive. Gives you an upbeat. He was very subdued, as Rodri just said. And that doesn't reflect well. And what would worry me as a Chelsea fan yesterday? United are the one that played 52, 53 games this season. Chelsea looked tired. Chelsea didn't, you know, they lacked energy, they lacked ideas, they lacked belief. This is a team that's going to go on and win the league. So,
I think it goes down to trust. And when Alonso got injured, obviously they put in Zuma at centre-back, and then move Azpilicueta to left wing-back or whatever. But if you notice at the beginning of the season, that when Azpilicueta was playing left-back for Chelsea, they weren't getting the results. Yeah. And then when he switched into the left side of a three, that's when they started performing. I think Conte knew that with Alonso out, they didn't have that outlet on the left-hand side.
The balance wasn't there exactly. On the left-hand side.
We spoke about it so many times. You've got a right-footed player playing on the left-hand side. Every time he goes forward, he's got to cut in.
Yep.
He can't deliver with his left foot. So obviously, that's going to throw his ideas out of the window. And I think, you know, Conte, as good as he is as a coach, and let's not, you know, no doubt about it, the top of the league, the table doesn't lie. But surely it's got to be a bit of a concern that one or two changes in the lineup
and the producer performance.
Not just that, but he was devoid of ideas.
Yeah.
He brought on Fabregas, they switched to four at the back. It didn't change anything, did it? Let's be 100% honest. Chelsea didn't turn up yesterday. It wasn't just United were fantastic. Let's not get overexcited about this. Chelsea were bad. I don't think they'll perform this badly again for the rest of the season. I think that it's just one of those games where it just didn't work for them and United were just a better team. You know, we might see a different Chelsea next week against Spurs. But as I said, it could be a turning point if Spurs beat them, because psychologically it could be massive. Rod, I'm sure we've, you know, you're just as surprised with how little Chelsea troubled United. Costa and Hazard in particular looked totally off the pace. As I said, do you think it was a case of a bad day at the office, or are they feeling the pressure?
I don't think they're feeling the pressure. You know, let's not kid ourselves. There's a lot of experience still with Conte and the players that's in that Chelsea squad. There's Champions League winners. There's Premier League winners. There's some big characters in there. So I don't think they'll be feeling the pressure. They possibly might be worried about how well Tottenham are doing, but I still fully expect Chelsea to go on and win the league. Tottenham wouldn't have won it. Chelsea would have lost it. Come on, let's face it. They were 13 points away not so long ago. So I still fully expect them to go on. I mean, it's looking at the fixtures, Tottenham have got some difficult games. And Chelsea always play in front of Tottenham. So they're always going 7 points. It's never going a point. It's like Tottenham will never play on a Saturday. And it's always Chelsea playing a day before. So that's a lot more difficult psychologically. But like you said about Saturday's game, mentally, it could change the balance again. If Chelsea get a good result against Tottenham, then it could all change again. But you know, it's a massive game on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, this leads us on to our buyback question, which is: if Chelsea fail to win the title, will this be the biggest choke in Premier League history? What do you reckon?
Well, United collapsed when City won the title, didn't they? And they collapsed as well when Arsenal won the title in 98.
Yeah, Newcastle's were 12 points, wasn't it?
Newcastle 12 points. Well, I don't think it would be.
No, well, there's three events that I've figured out. The first one, as you said, the one in 2012, United were 8 points clear of City with six games to go. Yeah. They lost on goal difference.
Yeah.
That was in 2012. 2014, Liverpool were 5 points clear of Chelsea with six games to go. Missed out by 2 points. So again, with 6 points, with six games to go, 2003, Arsenal were 8 points clear with nine games to go and they missed out by 5 points. So I think on the balance, so personally, if you look at
the way the teams are playing, you know, still Chelsea have still got to go to Stoke away, West Brom away, which are difficult games if you want to get results. You know, they don't give much away, West Brom, especially at home or Stoke. So the banana skins, but then you've got.
They are, but they don't have much to play for, these guys.
Spurs or Arsenal.
Yeah, I know they don't have much to play for, but don't forget, you.
You know,
it's Chelsea, you know, the top of the league at the moment. And you know that these players are thinking, hang about, they're going to come here and they've got a point to prove. They're the potential champions. Let's get at them. Let's see what they're made of. You know, I think, to be fair, if Chelsea collapse, it will be the biggest choke, purely on the basis that they haven't had European football. They've had one game a week. They've had one game a week. You know, they've obviously relied a lot on Diego Costa, and there was that little spat he had in January with Antonio Conte. But again, they've spent money. They've improved the squad. They've pretty much been top of the league since when?
September?
Come on. To be top of the league in September and then mess it up in May. For me, that's a big bottle job, that.
Yeah, I'll go along with that. I'm just looking at, you know, the other situations and the points with so many to go. By looking at it overall, you're probably right. If you're top of the league by September and then lose the league in May.
Well, in 2012, United were neck and neck with City all throughout the season. Liverpool were neck and neck with City in 2014. 2003, Arsenal neck and neck with United. So it's not as if one team was just running away with it. Chelsea were running away with it. How many points were they clear? 1 point? 12? 12, 15?
12, 13. Yeah.
13.
That's a big difference. That's a big difference. And now they're 4 points.
4 points.
You never know.
Semi-final coming up.
There you go. Well, look, this is what some people have been saying on Facebook group page. I'll shoot the defence one. Pascal Jimbonda says, yes, a few weeks ago I said to you it's done with them 13 points ahead. 13 have gone down to 4. I couldn't see it coming. Not with them having a single focus and at the time playing quite well. 2 draws will be enough for Spurs on goal difference as it stands. We love a 0-0 and go to the bridge. He's a Middlesbrough fan. So he'd be happy tonight. Harry Simeon from Sofa Sports News. I was on his podcast on Thursday. Great show. Check it. It's really good, I promise. He says, yes, because Spurs will be the worst team with exception of Leicester to turn the title race around. Worst team? Wow. He's an Arsenal
fan. Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
Rick, he's a Liverpool fan on our page, says it would be. But I reckon Chelsea won't drop enough points. Also, people are forgetting that Spurs will probably need to win all their games. They won't. They have 3 derbies and Man United. If they do manage to do it, it will be an amazing achievement. And Anthony, I'm not going to try and pronounce his surname because I can't. Can you do it?
Prodromo.
He's done it. I can't do it. He says, United lost the league with 6 games to go and 8 points clear. Aguero. Wicked. Speaking of which, don't forget, if you're listening to the podcast, which I hope you are, you can still let us know your views by tweeting us at Shoot the Defence or joining our group page on Facebook. All right, let's move on to Spurs. Their 4-0 annihilation of Bournemouth means Eddie Howe's men can't get the deck chairs out just yet as they sit on 35 points with Crystal Palace, 7 points off the relegation zone. Now, Hull's 3-1 loss at nothing to play for at this stage of the season. Stoke didn't damage their chances of survival thanks to Swansea's failure to get anything from we're on 40 points, so it's time to put our feet up. Watford. Rodri, Bournemouth have 2 huge games back-to-back. Middlesbrough at home and then Sunderland away, followed by Stoke at home, Burnley at home and Leicester away. Would you be worried if you're a Bournemouth fan?
I would be worried, but not worried where I think, you know, I think they've just done enough. They're on 35 points. It looks like Swansea and Hull are not going to even reach that mark. So, and with the games we've got left, I'm sure they're going to sneak a home win or a draw. So I think 39, 40 points will be enough for him. So I wouldn't be too worried if he was a Bournemouth fan. But I'd be worried about their form because, you know, we can't buy a win at the moment. So they've got to get a win quickly, very quickly. So probably Middlesbrough's the best bet this coming game. Yeah,
shout.
This fixture.
Now, Middlesbrough have lost 2-1 tonight to Arsenal. They finally scored. Are you still confident it will be Sunderland and Middlesbrough plus 1 to take the relegation spots?
Sunderland, Borough and Hull.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I think Swansea will go.
You think Swansea?
Yeah, I think Hull. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's look at Hull's remaining fixtures. They've got Watford at home, Southampton away, then Sunderland at home, Palace away and Spurs at home. I don't see them getting anything out of the last two games, to be fair. Sunderland at home, I think they'll beat. Then you've got Swansea remaining games. They've got Stoke at home, Man United away, Everton at home, Sunderland away and West Brom at home. I think West Brom, again, will have the deck chairs out. I think Sunderland will be down already. Everton, they're not going to beat. And then United is just a mixed bag. So
I'm going Hull.
I'm going Swansea.
You're going Swansea?
I'm going Hull. But then again, I might go for Bournemouth because you look at their fixtures.
Bournemouth will pull a rabbit out of the hat somewhere. They'll get a result. They only need probably 3-4 points maybe max.
What you're saying there, they've got Middlesbrough at home, Stoke at home, Burnley at home. They've got to get a win out of one of them.
Yeah.
Now, Burnley haven't won a game away from home all season.
Yeah.
So
Burnley will probably beat Bournemouth now saying that.
Yeah, you never know. You never know, yeah.
Probably.
You're going for Swansea, Rod.
Pardon?
You're going for Swansea to join Sunderland and Middlesbrough, yeah?
Being a fully blown Cardiff boy as well, Swansea, yeah, definitely.
Say no more.
Yeah, say no more.
I was coming back to Tottenham. Exactly. We've just had a question from Bam on the group page. He says, here's a question. Who will make the Champions League this year? Do you want to guess, Rod? Champions League, top 4.
That's a difficult question. I'm going to go with... Tottenham, Chelsea, City, Liverpool.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I said that 2 weeks ago, actually. What about you?
The same, but with United winning the Europa, so it'll be 5.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I'm not even going to talk about the Europa League. I'm going to
jinx. And if Leicester win the Champions League, fourth place don't get in.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So
they won't win the Champions
League. They won't win it.
What we say?
Hopefully, that'll be Liverpool.
Right, let's go to our In Other News section, which always seems to be eventful, isn't it? Mm. Let's start with Brighton, who ended their 34-year top-flight exile after beating Wigan 2-0. Huddersfield draw at Derby sealed the Seagulls' promotion. Now, gents, the Championship is obviously a very difficult league. In fact, it's probably the most difficult league to gain promotion from. Something Brighton know all about, having lost in last season's playoffs despite finishing third. This is some achievement, though, isn't it?
I think so. I think Chris Hughton is a really good manager. Everywhere he's gone, he's kind of turned clubs around. Yeah, he didn't have a great stint at Norwich where it didn't go well for him. But I think wherever he's gone, he's done a good job. Mm. And Brighton, let's be fair, in the Championship, don't have the biggest of budgets there as well. So, and especially following up from previous years where they've gone so close and the disappointment to kind of bounce back straight away. Mm-hmm. And it looks like they're going to win the league as well because Newcastle lost today as well, didn't they? They lost 3-1 to Ipswich. So they can even go up as champions, which might give them even more confidence for next year. They do need to strengthen. There's no two ways about it. But the achievement for a club like Brighton is brilliant.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Chris Hughton. This is the second promotion he's achieved as a manager. He guided Newcastle to the Premier League a few seasons ago. Why do you think he doesn't receive the same plaudits as other English managers or British managers?
Maybe because he hasn't managed for the biggest clubs, maybe.
He's very quiet. He's not controversial. He doesn't like the limelight. He just goes about his job. Does it very well by the looks of it. By winning two leagues, it's very difficult that Championship to win two leagues by the looks of it. So, and he's one of them rare ones that he's a manager, but he's a very, very top good coach as well. He's a top coach.
Yeah.
Okay. He's a fantastic manager. Mm. But he doesn't get the press because, like I say, he's quiet. He's not like he hasn't got a personality like a Klopp or a Mourinho, so the press don't stick to him or give him enough airtime. He just goes about his job quietly and does it very well.
Mm, absolutely. And Rod, Oliver Norwood, he finally gets his chance to shine in the Premier League. He showed a lot of promise tonight, didn't he?
Yeah, he was good, Oliver Norwood. Yeah, he was decent. It's always tough if you're not, like Danny Drinkwater, if you're not at a certain level, you're not going to get a chance. And it's just unfortunate for them. They've gone out and they've done well and they've got rewards.
That's right. And so staying in the Championship, Gianfranco Zola has resigned as Birmingham manager after 4 months in charge with the club 3 points above the relegation zone. Now, Zola said at full-time, I think they lost 2-0 to Burton today, didn't they?
Yeah.
He said, "I'm sorry because I came here with huge expectations." Okay. "And the results, unfortunately, haven't been good."
It's an understatement
of the season so far. "I take full responsibility for that." I'll give him credit for that.
So you should.
"Yeah. I'm the first one to be disappointed by results. I feel like I cannot help the team. It's better that I leave somebody else to do that." He said something like that when he left at Watford, didn't he? I don't actually know anyone who thought appointing him was a great idea. I mean, Birmingham were 3 points away from the playoff spot.
They were seven
behind Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah.
And then they sat Gary Rout to make way for Zola. Now, it's another ridiculous decision by a board who have absolutely no idea about football. I mean, Birmingham fans are livid and understandably so.
Oh, you know my opinions about this because I expressed
them. Let's rewind to when we had Mark on, the Birmingham fan, and he wasn't.
I said it. How can you employ a manager with his track record that's no good in previous clubs to a man at Gary Wright, who was a Birmingham boy, you know, fan, played the game at Birmingham. He was doing really well with the money, the budget, whatever he had there. It looked like they had the direction and they sacked him for what? No reason. It wasn't like he was having bad results. What was the reason for Gary Wright being set? So that they can accommodate...
To bring a trophy manager.
Yeah, a trophy manager. They might get relegated if they're not careful.
Yeah, four games to go?
Four games to go. I think they're three points above Blackburn.
Yeah.
And they're in free fall. And now with the manager going as well, okay, it can go two ways. It can bring in the guy to the end of the season and get some 3-4 points and stay up. But I said this, I said it wouldn't last till Christmas. It's gone before the season's even ended. I think I should have said that. 4 months.
4 months.
How many games has he won? Three?
Yeah. I mean, normally you get a 3 month probationary period in your job. Can you imagine? And he's walked. They haven't sacked him.
Yeah, he's gone. The worrying thing for Zola now is, who would employ him?
No one. Absolutely. Or
who
no
would
one.
Be silly enough? Leighton Orient are looking for a manager, maybe.
No,
you know?
That's no. That's suicide. Ros, what do you make of this whole thing?
Well, it's just bizarre, and it's just one of them crazy things where the owners are just not football people and don't have a clue what they're doing. And I hope they go down for it, because you know Gary Rowett's an up and coming, decent coach, young English coach, and they bring in Gianfranco Zola. Yeah, he was a great player, but he's done nothing as a manager. Nothing. Same as Tony Adams' situation. You're going into a place where you need to win games. You need to have a background of getting teams out of the trouble. Tony Adams hasn't got that as a coach. It's the same thing with Zola. It's just a strange one. It's just the owners bringing a player in because of his name, not because of how good he is on the training pitch.
I just think appointments now from board members, like Gary Neville at Valencia, with no experience at managing anywhere. I mean, Valencia, one of the biggest clubs in Spain.
We spoke about this last week. It's this conflict of interest that, you know, these managers are brought in by chairman or owners because of their name or because they've worked with him for another company that's linked to one that they own. Gary Rowett has turned Derby around. I think it's 3 wins in the last four.
Yeah.
I cannot understand the whole appointment in the first place for Zola. I mean, we know why it happened, because it's a trophy.
With the Gary Neville thing, you can't blame Gary Neville for taking that job.
No, you can't. It's the board. I mean, but
yeah,
the decision to appoint him in the first place, I mean, they're all sitting down on a table going, next manager, Gary Neville. On what basis?
He's my mate.
It's the same what happened with David Moyes at United. Mm. You know? The most important thing is the players need to get the respect of the manager instantly. Once they've got the respect, they can work towards the manager. Who's going to respect Gary Neville? They respect him as the player for what he did at United, but not the coach, not the manager.
Mm.
The same with Moyes. You know, players like, you know, Rio and Vidic, all these kind of championship-winning players over the past, they'll look at Moyes and go, what have you won?
Yeah.
You know, you need to get somebody with a track record or someone with a bit more experience to gain the instant respect from the players.
No, I agree. But the thing is, with Birmingham City, as we said, they were 3 points off the playoff place. The players are going into work in the morning for training and they're hearing that Gary Rowett's been sacked. And they're thinking,
why?
For what?
Yeah.
We're on the verge of doing something good. You know, that feel-good factor's back at the club. You know, the fans are happy. Yeah. We're close to, you know,
doing something.
Yeah. Yeah. And they get rid of him. And they bring in a guy who, as you said, his track record is appalling. He failed in Saudi Arabia, wherever he was.
Yeah.
And they brought him in, and they're thinking, okay, he's going to change everything. He's going to change system. He's going to change diet. He's going to change the training regime. He's going to change this. And the players are like, well, we're happy with what we've got at the moment. Why change it?
Change it, yeah. And don't forget, just players talk in the dressing room as well. They're probably looking and go, Zola, what's he done? Why is he here? You know, instantly, question marks. You know, doubting the manager straight away. It's not good for the club. And I fear for Zola as a coach or as a manager now. Mm-hmm. You know?
I agree. Nice guy. Rubbish manager. Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah. Right. And from the Championship to the Champions League, something we haven't spoken about for a while. Strange. Juventus, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid and Monaco are favourites to contest the semi-finals following their first leg wins. Now, Ronaldo became the first player to score 100 Champions League goals by bagging a brace in Real's 2-1 win at Bayern Munich, while Juventus hammered Barcelona 3-0. Now, gents, Lewandowski is set to return for the second leg for Bayern in Madrid. Now, they've clearly missed him as they've only scored once in the last two games.
Yeah.
The tie is far from over, isn't it?
No, it's not over yet.
Far from over.
But Bayern have got very good attacking players that can go and score goals anywhere. And Ancelotti is a brilliant manager as well. So tactically, hopefully, you're going to get it right in the Bernabeu. But that's a worry if Lewandowski misses for Bayern in the last two games. They've only scored one goal. That's a worry. So they need to get him back as quick as they can. But Bayern have to score two. You see Real Madrid scoring in the Bernabeu. It's going to be difficult, but it could happen.
Rodri, do you fancy Real Madrid to hang on?
it'll be an exciting game. Like Jan was saying, then they've got to score two, so they've got to go out and they've got to go for it straight away. So it'll be an exciting game, an open game. So they could do it. They've got the players to easily do it. It's just like to say, can you stop Real Madrid scoring? So
I agree.
That's one I'll be watching. That's for sure.
And Barcelona staged one of their greatest, or should I say one of the greatest ever comebacks in the last run against Paris Saint-Germain. Now, Juve are a different animal, though, aren't they? I mean, can you lot see a repeat of their heroics?
No, definitely not. It's PSG and Juve. Juve are a lot more defensive-minded, much better organised defensively. I can't see them even shipping two goals, never mind three or four.
Was it last time Juventus actually conceded three goals? Was it in the Champions League final against Barcelona?
Yeah, I think so.
I can't see it. I mean, can you?
I can see
it's one of them. It's one of them strange ones. Do they they go back? They just sit and defend, and you know that's just inviting pressure. And with Barcelona, you don't really want to do that for 90 minutes because anything can happen. They scored three goals in 3 minutes. A couple of weeks ago, so there's always maybe, but I can't really see it, to be honest.
I can see it happening, but two factors where I can't. Barcelona are not playing well at all. I've been watching them closely. They look tired. Their squad is not good enough. So when key players are missing, the players filling in for them are not good.
Or when key players missing.
They all go missing. I haven't seen Messi for a while, have we? But it's another story. And Dybala and Higuain were hurt any defence. So if Juve get it on the counter-attack, where they're going to, they're an Italian team, they can defend, they can hit you on the break, them two are going to score.
I can see them nicking a win. I can see them nicking a 1-0 or a 2-1.
2-1, yeah.
I can't see them not scoring. I mean, Cavani scored. So if Cavani can score the new count, then why can't Higuain or Dybala?
I agree.
The pace that Juve have on the counter-attack is...
Cuadrado on the right as well can hurt anybody as well with his pace. So,
exactly. So I think we can say bye to Barcelona, to be fair. But anyway, you never know. Right, Dortmund, they lost their rearranged match with Monaco 3-2, although a few of their players felt it was too soon as they were still in shock because of, obviously, the whole bomb thing. They weren't in shock, oddly enough, at the weekend when they beat Frankfurt 3-1. What chance do you guys give Dortmund and Leicester, seeing as there's only one goal in it in both games?
Leicester, I don't.
No?
No. I think Atletico are too shrewd, too tactically aware, got better players than Leicester. So I think the experience as well of Atletico being in the Champions League could play a key factor as well. Dortmund, anything can happen. They're two brilliantly attacking football teams. Don't be surprised that's 4-4 tomorrow. You know, probably saying that now, probably be 0-0. But, both teams are scoring goals for fun. I mean, Monaco's got like 130 goals this season or something silly like that. Got another key victory at the weekend.
2-1.
2-1. Falcao's got a brilliant free kick. So confidence there will be good. Dortmund, after the events of last week, they bounced back to their credit to get a 3-1 win.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything can happen on that in that game, but don't be surprised if Dortmund do go through.
Yeah,
you know, that'll be a good game to watch. I think.
Rod, what do you reckon?
They're both games are still up in the air, really, aren't they? But I still think that Atletico will go on and win it. But you know, you never know that ground could be bouncing and they get an early goal and it could be game on there. And it's the same with the other game. Like Jan said, it could be a 3-3, 4-4. It's going to be an open game. There'll be definitely goals. So that one's up in the air as well. So there's only really one game that's finished for me, and that's Juventus and Barcelona. And you've still got but it's Barcelona. You can score three goals. So, but, I still think Madrid will be too strong for Leicester. And I think Monaco will beat Dortmund about 4-1, 4-2.
Fair enough. Good. Right. Non-league footballer. You're going to like this one. Non-league footballer, Billericay Town star man Jamie O'Hara made the news for the second time in a week, which is about two times more than he did while he was playing full-time, for pushing a fan. Now, the incident occurred as he left the pitch following his side's 3-2 loss at Leatherhead. O'Hara has been fined 2 weeks' wages and warned of his future conduct, whatever that means. The club hit the headlines last week with their rendition of R. Kelly's World's Greatest before a cup final, which they won 8-3, and it went viral. I mean, you've got two former Premier League players. How can you not win? Now, O'Hara is no stranger to controversy, though. I mean, there was the well-documented Twitter war with our mate Leon Knight, then his forage into the celebrity Big Brother house where he conquered Bianca Gascoigne, and now this. Now, Jess, is this another publicity stunt, or is Mr. O'Hara actually imploding?
It's difficult, isn't it? The one where he's coming off the pitch, I've seen little bits of that, and I've seen bits of it where someone said that someone spat on him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you've just been beat, and then you're walking off the pitch, and you're clapping, someone spits on you, then I'd probably slap him myself, but you just don't know. Even though that'd be wrong, someone just walk off, you know, but... I don't know where he's gone. He's gone from Jamie O'Reilly, from being a Tottenham, his Tottenham days. He seemed like a good player, but he seems to have gone chubby and he's permanently studying an all. So I don't know. I don't know where he's gone from Tottenham days to now. I don't know why he's at that standard. You know, he's just... But the coming off the pitch bit, it looks like someone's spat on him, so you can't really blame him. I'd do the same, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, he's become a target because of his antics off the pitch. Yeah. And obviously, you know, I don't know how much he's on at Billericay, but from what I understand, the manager is actually the owner of the club and he's loaded. So he's able to pay big wages. Now, when you're a former Premier League player, he's only 30 years old, isn't he? He's not old.
No.
He's only 30 years old. So when you're a former Premier League player, he doesn't really play for Spurs, he played for Fulham, he played for Portsmouth. Also, he's played for big clubs. Make no mistake about it. He should be able to control his temper, but obviously, whatever's happened to him in his life, he's just gone
off the rails, hasn't he?
He has. Yeah. Look, everyone goes through these things, but you know, again, from a professional standpoint, I understand if someone's speaking to you, you're going to react, but you're still a footballer and you're a high profile name. You're going to be making the news headlines or whatever. Like I said, he was singing R. Kelly in the changing room, and that went viral. So,
If you look at that really though, there. Sorry to interrupt you, Steve. If you look at James, he's like got his eyes down, and you could know, thinking to yourself, "What the fuck am I doing here?"
I think Konchesky.
Some of them are like, "Look at the camera," and thinking, "Oh." But you know, he's gone from he's one of them top footballers that's got in a relationship that's living the lifestyle and he's getting brushed along with all this crap and all this celebrity BS that comes along with it. Yeah. And it's just took his football a back step. Yeah. And then now he's where he is now. So what he's got to do is he's got to knuckle down, work hard, because he was a decent player. He's got a good left back on him. And stop singing in the changing room.
Well, speaking of altercations with fans, Tim Howard has been banned for 3 games for calling a fan a mother. Something. Howard later squared up to Kansas player at full time and had to be held back by official. Now, Rodri, this is a bit of a strange one because, you know, Tim Howard, he played in the Premier League for over 10 years and never reacted like this, ever. I mean, these are actions of a teenager, not a 38-year-old goalkeeper, mate. It's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a strange one, but, you know, he's highly strung, Tim Howard, so but it's like you say, it's... Someone's obviously rubbed him up the wrong way, and his fuse is gone. And he should, with his experience, he should know better.
Exactly.
But you know, it happens, doesn't it? What did he call him? A fan mother? Oh, yeah, he's
called him worse than that. It was worse than that, Rod.
It was worse, but I'm not going to repeat that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a professional. He should just over the head. He should be big enough and old enough now to just let them things ride and get on with it.
There you go. And so staying in America, and David Villa scored from the halfway line for New York City against Philadelphia Union. Now, gents, I can't accept many excuses made by a goalkeeper who's beaten from that distance. I know we've often seen goals from there, you know, they've been assisted, you know, by strong winds. But on this occasion, the goalkeeper's nowhere to hide. As harsh as this sounds, I think this is a sackable offence. What do you think?
Sackable?
Yeah, I'd sack him. If my goalkeeper did that, 50 yards out, he's taking side steps and then he realises, oh crap, I can't get it. Then I'm going to run backwards.
It was in the 90th minute. They're chasing the game. He's probably off his line trying to help.
He was on the penalty spot. He was on the penalty spot.
And you're going to sack a goalkeeper for conceding a goal from the halfway
line? Yes, I would.
Really?
Yes.
Bit hard.
You're not a goalkeeper. You don't get beaten from there. I don't care.
I'm too short to be a goalkeeper.
Well, I'm just saying, you don't get beaten from there. I'm sorry. I know it happened. Yeah. I know it happened with David Beckham and Neil Sullivan. Look what happened with him.
No, I agree. The keeper shouldn't get beat from that range. But to go as far as sacking him was a bit strong. But give Villa credit. The vision, the fact that he's seen the goalkeeper from where he is off his line and he's done what he's done.
I'm going to give David Villa credit.
Yeah.
You think it was great vision. It was a great goal. If he was my teammate, he'd want to be sacked because he'd be getting a lot of stick getting beat from that distance.
Okay, put it this way. David Villa has won everything there is to win.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Why am I going to give him credit for scoring in MLS from the halfway line? In MLS.
It's a great goal.
Why am I going to give him credit for scoring that goal?
The pitch is smaller over there as well. They're different over there, aren't they? They're smaller than pitches.
Yeah, they are. I mean, New York City's pitch is probably one of the smallest. Yeah, but I'm talking about New York City's pitch.
Yeah, but they were away.
Yeah, they were away. But talking about pitches,
right, okay.
They've got one of the smallest pitches.
Yeah, because they play a baseball stadium, don't they?
That's right.
They play at Yankee Stadium, I think.
I still give you credit. Yeah. I think you're being too harsh.
I don't care. Goalkeeper should have got sacked. 2:45, mate.
Windy day.
2:45. Right, Tony Adams. We mentioned him earlier. His first game in charge for Granada ended in a 3-0 defeat at the hands of Celta, which I'm not really surprised about. I don't think anyone expects him to work miracles at the club, and this really won't end well, will it?
No. I mean, for me, the most embarrassing thing about the defeat yesterday was Celta Vigo made 10 changes because they've got the Europa League
on Thursday.
So they kind of played their second reservey kind of team. And let's face it, Segunda. And Celta Vigo's first team are not even that great. So imagine going to Granada, we're fighting for their lives and actually beating them 3-0 and quite comfortably 3-0.
Well, I saw it last night. Granada had a couple of chances before they went a goal down, didn't they?
They did, but Granada are going.
If you're at the bottom of the Liga and you've got Nigel Iorkoeke and Kieran Richards having trials, you're in trouble.
Yeah, in his interview, didn't he? When he got the job, he was like, well, whatever division we're going to be in next year, we know what division you're going to be in next year. So he's planning for next year. He's not going to go in and...
At the top of the league or the bottom of the league, if he was on that training pitch and watching Tony Adams doing all his actions, you'd be going, who's this character here? In Spanish, who's this over here?
Well, he said he wants a reaction, doesn't he? He said we've got too many young players, they haven't got enough fight, and he's got to come from the coach. So he's trying to show a bit of kind of skill, a bit of leadership. And it didn't work yesterday, did it?
The thing that Rodri was talking about was a training session.
Yeah, he was the local Englishman here, the local guy.
It's where he was doing the little dance.
Well, they call him shuttles, don't they? They call him shuttles and something else. Shuttles and... I don't know, but it just did not look like you could take him serious, honestly. And maybe... I can't even explain. Look, I've never coached before, so I wouldn't know. But for me, if I'm a footballer looking at him do that, I'd wet myself. I'd actually wet myself. It's too funny. It's too funny. But anyway.
There's also the language barrier. That's a problem as well. I don't think he speaks Spanish, does he?
He's gesticulating a lot. Like, he's just doing this. Yeah, he's just doing this. And they're looking at him like... Look, when he came in, the press conference, he said that the team are too foreign. Now, a lot of people gave him stick for saying that, but... When you look at the squad, they've got 17 players on loan from other clubs, and 13 of those are non-Spanish. So that's what he meant.
Yeah.
He didn't mean all because he was... No. So obviously, there might be a difficulty when it comes to the language, but having said that, a lot of them are South American and obviously they speak Spanish. So I don't think communicating will be an issue. The issue will be him and him getting his points across because, as you said before with David Moyes, they look at his CV and they're like, who are you? You did well as a player, but what have you done? You managed a team in Azerbaijan. What did you do? You managed Portsmouth. What did you do? They're Googling Tony Adams. That's what they're doing.
So that earlier about the respect and whatever else, you know. And the fact that they've got so many players on loan kind of proved it yesterday as well. You know, there wasn't a fight. You know, we got Andres Pereira at Granada. Mm. He's probably thinking, can I get into Man United's team next year? Mm. He's not thinking about Granada. He's waiting for the season to end and go back to United. And There wasn't a fight yesterday from Granada at all. You would have thought, especially with Tony Adams, the way that he was as a player, how passionate he was. There was nothing there yesterday. So he's got a big job at Granada for next season.
Well, it's like you said, the players, I've Googled him. It's all right being a good player. It's once you stop playing, that's it. it's just your culture. You're going to a brand new area now. You're totally starting from scratch. You're no longer playing. You're coaching, and you're in a new world. So it's totally different from yeah, he might have been a top player, but it's different. It's in a different world now, and he's not had a good record. If you look at his record, so they're probably thinking he's saying all the right things, but yeah, he's a foreign manager and he's bringing foreign players on trial. It doesn't make sense. So it just doomed soon, straight up the doom as soon as he walks in the door. And that's no disrespect to Tony Adams. He's not capable of getting him out of that situation. I don't think he's got the experience or the know-how or probably the quality to get him out of that situation.
To be fair, they don't have the players to do that as well. They're in that mess before Tony Adams there anyway, so...
When you've got a lot of players, it's difficult as well. You know, at the end of the season, they're all off. They're all going anyway, so they won't bother, some of them.
And the thing is, you look at their running, I think they've got Malaga to play.
They've got Real Madrid.
Well, yeah, they've got Malaga, who are chasing a Europa League spot. They've got Espanyol, who's chasing a Europa League spot. Real Sociedad, chasing a Europa League spot. Real Madrid, as you said, they've got Osasuna at bottom. And let's be honest, Osasuna, they're probably looking at them thinking, well, you're going to be joining us, so whatever. So
we can beat you. Yeah.
Exactly. Look, they're a club, Granada are a club that almost went out of business 8 years ago. You know, if it had not been for Pozzo, who came in and signed and bought the club and did this whole, you know, transferring players from Udinese to there and vice versa to get the experience and whatnot, they'd be nowhere. Granted, they did very well to get like two consecutive promotions to La Liga. They've been there since 2011. But I don't know. Listen, teams like Granada, they're just a cash cow for these new owners, and they got this Chinese owner. He doesn't really know much about football. It's just a trophy for him. I don't know.
You look at teams like Sporting Gijón, who put a massive fight against Madrid the other day, and they're battling relegation. They only lost 3-2 last minute, so they're showing.
They play them as well. Yeah, they play them as well. Actually, was it Sevilla? I think they play Sevilla as well. They play Sevilla.
And so I think teams above them are going to get more points than Granada, and you don't see Granada picking up enough points to stay up. So I think they're doomed.
Not at all. Right, and let's end the show with the big news coming from Milan, where AC have been taken over by Chinese investor Rossoneri Sport Investment Lux for £628 million. The takeover came 24 hours before the club came from 2-2 against fierce rivals Inter to earn a draw. So much for Serie A being boring. Mate, when you look at the derby, I mean, it was a great game, wasn't it? Another 2-2 draw, another dramatic equaliser with literally the last kick of the game. Yep. As I said, who said Italian football was boring?
Not this year. I've enjoyed the Italian league this year. They've been even teams like Atalanta, Torino, Genoa. These teams are scoring goals for fun week in, week out. As for the derby, what a brilliant game! Inter deservedly were 2-0 up in the first half, and then AC Milan just turned it around second half as well. And it was end to end
goal line technology,
which worked. Zapata was it 97th minute.
Imagine 7 minutes in added time, you can see the goal and against your rival.
But it happened in the reverse fixture, didn't it? When Inter scored,
that's right. Yeah,
Perisic. So roles reversed, and especially now with the money at Milan for next year. There could be a force next year as well, because the name is always going to attract players. Yes, they haven't done anything for, was it 10 years now, maybe? But who they are will always attract players. Mm-hmm. And the money talks, we all know that with players these days. So they could be challenging Juve next year.
Absolutely. Well, do you know what? You've just answered my next question. Oh. I mean, as I was about to say, you know, the takeover has happened, and I think it dragged on for a couple of years and negotiating this and that. And the club's general manager said that a new stadium is in their short-term plans, which is a good thing, because I think they're renting the Giuseppe Meazza from the council now. Both Milanese clubs have Chinese owners, so I guess it's going to be... What kind of derby are we going to call it next season? El Chinese O? I don't know. obviously, they're still both giants of European football, no question about that. Now, can you both see them wrestling the title back from Juventus and becoming a regular contender for the Champions League like they once were?
I can see it. If they bring the right players in, and don't forget, Milan looks like they're not going to have any Champions League or European football next year, so they might do a Chelsea. One game a week. You know, Juve will still have Champions League football, and, you know, they'll still have the league, and If Milan, like I said, bring in AC Milan, that is, if they bring in the right players, why not? Make a challenge.
Rod, what do you reckon?
Yeah, 100%. It's like Jan says, it's all about recruitment and who they bring in. You know, it's not as good as the 25, 30 years ago Italian league, but it's, you know, it's still up there. Juventus is still a top outfit. And with the right investment and the right recruitment, definitely could be a force to be reckoned with again. Definitely both clubs, you know, Inter Milan, what, they won the Champions League only 5 years ago, 4 years ago, and AC Milan, well, their history talks to itself. So yeah, I could definitely see it, but it's just bringing the right players in and the right people in and the right manager.
I think it would be great for Serie A. I mean, let's not forget, you know, Juventus have been dominating the competition
six, 7 years now.
It's mad. You know, Roma and Napoli are the closest rivals, and they're how far behind? It's crazy. You know, that league has got prestige. It's got history. You know, I remember in the 90s watching these games where you got Hullet, Van Basten, Rijkaard, Bremer,
Donadoni,
the three Germans at Inter, Rudi Völler, all these players, Brazil. We don't just talk about these guys. Like, you know, you got your Brazilians that went out there. Carlos Dunga was there at one point. You know, Ancelotti was playing. Serie A was one of the best leagues in the 90s. Maradona was there. Batistuto.
The list
goes on. That Parma team was just
incredible. Crespo up front, wasn't
it? Yeah. Seedorf played for every team there, didn't he? So I think it's about time that it's got a bit of a shake up and becomes more competitive, and you know, Milan deserves to be there. I don't care what anyone says. I had this debate with an Arsenal fan on Twitter about Milan. You can't compare the club's histories, man. You just don't even talk about them in the same breath. Honestly, it's crazy. But anyway,
is it four Champions League to Milan?
Yeah, four. That's it. Yeah. How many Scudettos? I don't even know. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. So, well, that's pretty much it for the show, gents. Enjoyed it.
Always.
Good, fantastic. Do you want to give our listeners your Twitter so they can bombard you with abuse?
Yannickis J. Any abuse would be good.
Excellent. Rod, thanks for coming on the show again, mate. Really appreciate it.
Anytime, pal. Anytime.
You want to give us your Twitter?
Rod James Giggs.
Excellent. Wonderful. And yeah, give us a follow at Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook groove. Groove. Yeah.
It's because you was in the groove.
I was in the groove. Everyone's dancing on the Facebook group page. Yeah, we have a Facebook group page. Feel free to join. Please follow our friends at the FNX Network on Twitter at FNX Network. Our sponsors, MySportswear at MySportswear1. And also the Offside Trust. Give them a follow. I'm going to be interviewing Steve Waters on Thursday. So yeah, that's pretty much it. And that's us for this week. So, until next time, take care of yourselves and each other, as Jerry Springer once coined.